what makes you such a threat.
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
Chasha, I can't do Chasha. Oh, I don't know if I'm going to get a little bit. Oh, I'm going to get a little bit. 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 I can't think of that on each of the Aki Heron on a hockey chill of money picked. Macaque the hockey dog. Hey, on which then we don't.
Thank you for being here. I have good feelings in my heart. For today, it is First Voices Radio. Greetings. Welcome, my relatives. I shake your hands with good feelings in my heart. It's good for all of us to be here. Let the people hear your voice respectfully and celebrate life in addition to reality. This is First Voices Radio, and I send you greetings and strength from the east gate of Turtle Island, where the sun and the water touch the earth at once. And I want to thank you for your generosity as always and for being there. You know who you are. And without you, we cannot continue. My English name is Teokazen Ghost Horse, and I am your host for First Voices Indigenous Radio. On this day in history, in 1512, the Spanish Crown enacted the Leyes de Burgos, or Laws of Burgos, which were the first codified set of laws governing the behavior of Spaniards in the Americas, particularly with regards to indigenous peoples. The laws forbade the maltreatment of indigenous peoples, endorsed their conversion to Catholicism, authorized and legalized the colonial practice of creating encomiendas, which Indians were forcibly grouped together to work under colonial masters. And this week in history, 2 days from now, in 1890, the Wounded Knee Massacre happened near Wounded Knee Creek in Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota. On the morning of December 29th, U.S. troops went into the Lakota camp to disarm them. And as a result, the 7th Cavalry opened fire indiscriminately from all sides, killing men, women, and children, as well as some of their own fellow troopers. And by the time it was over, at least 300 people were dead and were killed, and all of them were Lakota. Alex White Plume is in Oglala, Lakota, and one of the founders of the Wounded Knee Bigfoot Memorial Ride, which started in 1986. And at that time, people were feeling that we needed a wiping of the tears ceremony after the massacre at Wounded Knee in 1890. And the ride began because of the way people were living. They needed to change, and that brought awareness to what happened to Bigfoot and his people at Wounded Knee. And right now we have on the line from Pine Ridge in Manderson, or near Manderson, on Wounded Knee Creek, is Alex White Plume. Good morning, Yana Washtelo, Alex. Are we okay with being able to...
Well, I'm okay with it, Teo Kirsten. I'm just happy. I'm just proud you asked me to talk about the Wokiksuye. We called it the Wokiksuye, which was a remembrance of what happened to Chief Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
And I was glad you told me, asked me this, because I hardly ever, no one ever knows about the history of the Bigfoot ride, because it was, we never talked about it. We in Europe, they know about it, in France and Belgium, all over the place, they know about what we're doing, but it seems like in America, they don't really hear about it ever or even care about it. Mm-hmm. But late in 19, if you don't mind, I'll just go ahead. I'm just anxious to talk about
it. Yes, please. Go. Okay.
Yeah, the 1984, 85, we were just evaluating ourselves, and we said, why are we living this way? And I remember a time whenever we had boss farmers on the res. Everybody was bossed around by a boss farmer. And I went to the military in 73, late 73, and I was doing the violence going on here at, and right up the road from where I live. I only live 7 miles from Wounded Knee. And so I wanted to live, so I went to the Army, and here somehow I ended up in Berlin and got to see different cultures. But I came home in 1978 after 4 years in Berlin. I was behind the Iron Curtain and where the wall was. And when I came home, that same feeling of being, have guards, armed guards all around the reservation, it felt that same way here on the Pine Ridge Reservation. And so, and then I remembered our past. And I remember whenever our Indians were bossed by white guys, white people on the reservation. You get 100 Indians say, well, we want to do this, but one white guy tell you, nah, you guys got to go do this. They all run and do that. So we were just being colonized. We've been colonized, and there was no Sundances. Just there was two on Pine Ridge, I remember back then. And but the churches were in full steam. There was over 50 churches on the Pine Ridge Reservation, and they just had a lot of people. And so we realized, why are we living this way? It was our own people who became the dominating, the colonizers on the reservations. And so then we looked, and here we realized, those of us who spoke our language, those of us who kept to our natural ways, were the poorest people on the reservation. And so then we sort of looked on each reservation. Here's the same on each reservation. The ones who clung to their culture and clung to their ways usually were the poorest of the poor on each reservation. So we clung to our culture for support, for survival. And we ask, why is this? Why is this way? All the government policies were designed to colonize us, fall into the melting pot. There wasn't no hope. And then they passed that Freedom of Religion Act, but that doesn't do nothing to our culture, our ceremonies. That's for the peyote religion. And it was just a sad time. So we talked about it, and then we wanted to develop our youth to be Lakota. We wanted to stop the brain drain of this colonization. And we always say the children are of the earth, and we all been saying this. And we all been saying this is all of our land. Why ain't we doing nothing? And here we realize since 1973, the occupation of Wounded Knee, the violence erupted. And then we had the real poverty. It was the poorest of the poorest, the Pine Ridge. But Eagle Butte beat us this year, so we're second poorest on the totem pole in the States. Mm. But anyway, we talked about it and talked about it, and finally we went to ceremony, and we believe in a ceremony. And I went up to one of my first cousins. His name is Curtis Kilsrey. And I apologize for saying his name because he passed on, but he was a holy man, the only one we had here in Manderson, and he used the spirits for healing. And he was, I'm not going to tell how I met him, but we went to a ceremony, and he directed me. He said, Alex, you have to go over there and get on your horse. And he gave me four instructions. One was to use an eagle feather, and the horse should have an eagle feather. That was one instruction. And the second instruction was not to invite nobody. Don't invite anybody. The spirits will do the bidding. And the third one was, don't look back when you're coming back on that spirit trail. And the reason you don't look back is our ancient relatives that were killed at Wounded Knee, they still walk that trail. And we're going to be riding with the spirits of our ancestors. And they're going to be so happy that we might cause our own stroke. So that's why we use the eagle feather. And so those were the instructions that were given to us. And so we were just in shock, you know, in 1985, we're going to get on horseback. You know, we're already colonized. We're practically American. And we asked a few of our people, and we were criticized. And so we said, it was kind of hard to do, but we said, well, the spirits told us to do something. We can't say no. And I think it was someone else, they probably would have never followed through with this. So that first year, we couldn't get to Eagle Butte. We couldn't get to Bridger because all I had was a 1973 Bonneville four-door classic, you know. We had saddles tied on every place, and we found Bridger Camp where Hump's Village was. And that first year, 19 riders, we took off from there, and I led the ride. I blindfolded my horse. That's what the forest instructions from Curtis was, that the lead horse would blindfold his horse so that he could ride through the spirits, and the rest of the horses would follow. And we left late at night, and it was coming through that old bridge by Bridger, that metal bridge, and it was so cold, and the river, Cheyenne River, was full of ice. And you ever hear ice crack? It sounds like a bomb exploding. It just cracks, and it just echoes up the canyon, and the horses would just jump straight up in the air and just go backwards, and they didn't want to go close to the river. But my horse was blindfolded, and I had an eagle feather, and it took every ounce of energy I had to go through that bridge. We couldn't cross the river because of the cracking sound. And when we got about halfway, the river would crack again, and the horses would just stand up and try to go back on that river, and it was just really eerie time. But we left from Bridger that year, and we didn't set the trail. We just said we let the spirits guide us, and we came back to each campsite that Chief Bigfoot and his band camped back in those days. And in our history recently, we've been talking about that. The ghost dance was in full effect, and that was the saddest thing, why America would want to kill our ghost dancers. Because to me, when you listen to the ghost dance song, you know, it goes, Ina Guvana, Ina Guana, Chaske Lochie. And his mom, mom, come home now. The oldest son is hungry now. Dad, dad, come home now. Mom needs food to feed us. These are the kind of songs in those ghost dance songs. It was a time for crying to live, to try to live, try to get some food so we wouldn't stop starving. And so to us, that was just build up some kind of hope to exist back in those days. Because the Lashitos was wiped out the buffalo, they wiped out the deer, they were bringing cattle in, and we were just treated like children. Instead of the original landowners, we had a real sophisticated way. So we realized all this, and then we also realized when Lakotas go to war, we never kill. We count it coup. So to kill somebody was end all. It was more honorable to count coup. And in Wounded Knee, when they wiped out 300, the whole Chief Bigfoot's band, his name was Spotted Elk. His whole band was wiped out except for 30 who were taken to Pine Ridge. And that was a total, total shock to our mind. So we went into a paralysis in our mind, or just a shock of it. We couldn't, seems like we couldn't make decisions. We couldn't do anything. We just went along with whatever because that was such a heavy burden in our minds. And so when this holy man kills me, he gave us this ceremony. He said, it's time to wipe the tears of the people. And so you can go four times. In these 4 years, you look within. O'ich ilepo, he said. O'ich ilepo. And in the fifth year, you tell the world or you tell the people what you found. Very simple instructions. And so we did. We went four times. And in the fifth year, we wiped the tears of our nation. And it was really a difficult time for us because some of our own people that were totally colonized, they criticized us. They did everything they could to create roadblocks for us. For the life of me, I never thought one of my aunties would call me a sun worshiper, because I sun danced. And it was just crazy. But we held together with the permanent beliefs of Curtis Kilsrey. And so that's how the rite started, was with a holy man and a ceremony. And the ones who believed in that way, the strongest believers, were the ones who came out, and we supported each other, and we went on this horse. Some didn't have saddles. But we had this strong urgency to be Lakota again. So we did, and after that, it was a whole pleasant feeling, because when you came on the ride that first year, everybody spoke Lakota, and it was just silly because we out-common each other, you know. Yeah. And it was just fun to be Lakota, and nobody was competing about anything, and it was just laughter, and it felt so good to be Lakota. And the second year, that first year, we went from 19 riders to 28 riders in 86, 87. And then in 88, we jumped up to 35 riders. And then in 9, we went to 44 riders. In 1990, there was 325 of us who rode into Wounded Knee on horseback. And this was without inviting anybody. Me, when somebody asked me if I could go on a ride, I said, well, if you have to ask me, that means you're not ready, so don't come. If you're ready, you will just join in and come along with us. So this is how the Bigfoot Memorial Ride, they call it, or Sitanka Wokiksi, as we call it, evolved. And it was a good thing. It was a simple thing. And today, we're so proud with Lakota. And from zero Sundances on many reservations across the United States, today there's Sundancing going on everywhere. And we don't mind that, because in the past, we researched our past, and there's over 40 different allies that we created in the past. All this Black Hills Ronis territory was Lakota territory. And like the Pawnee was the first ceremony we had for Hunka, was between us and the Pawnee. But the Washitus, they have that history backwards. They said we went over there and wiped them out. That wasn't the truth. There was a war, but we didn't wipe them out. We made relative with them. So Pishnami brought us that first ceremony there. So the Pawnees are Lakota. I'm a Pawnee Lakota. That's how they should announce themselves. And not only them, but like the Mandan, Arikara, Hidatsa, they came up the river and they were real poor condition. So we found them and we brought them back to good health and we hunkaed them. So they could live in Lakota territory up there in North Dakota area. And it just, every band we met, that's how we kept peace, was we adopt them as relative. And that's not a treaty. A treaty is just a contract. It's more intimate when you hunkaed them. So all these bands, like the Northern Cheyenne, they live in the middle of our Black Hills. They also, I should say, I'm a Northern Cheyenne Lakota because we hunkaed them. But the white man, he put us on these little bitty reservations. And so today, most of these bands become almighty on their reservations, and they forgot those ancient ties. So today, we're trying to refresh that. We're trying to bring back, hey, did you know that you were hunkaed with us? And we need you to realize that band. Otherwise, what are you doing in Lakota territory? So anyway, the whole story was, that's how it got started. So, and I just kept talking. Sorry, Hilke.
No, that I didn't want to interrupt you, Alex, because we were getting a history book even more than that. We're getting the whole feel of what would really happen down there, since, you know, your DNA, your blood is from that time as well. And my question would be, Alex White Plume, is you mentioned earlier that 30 survived at the camp, were taken to Pine Ridge, and do we hear enough about the ones who escaped and were able to go to the stronghold?
No, very few, and even clear up to today, people still fear the government for retaliation. So nobody will know the ancient history except us. That's the same for the Battle of the Little Bighorn. We know the intimate story, how we rubbed out Custer and who's got the flag, but we're not going to expose those. We keep them because we're still afraid of retaliation. And it's even gotten worse with this Homeland Security thing. So those are some stories that are real intimate. The people are still alive.
Yes.
And we'll always know them, but the ones who speak Lakota, it's a secret. Discussions that just go on and we choke about. A custard come running into our camp and fell down.
yeah, I hear you. Well, you know, there's a lot of history that people have misnomered, you know, they've misplaced, and they've also just misinterpreted and went on to say, well, the Lakota were this and were that. And you started the whole session out with saying about the Lakota language, that we only counted coup, and it was not very dishonorable for us to kill another human being. And I know that through interpretation, that the Lakota have no word for human being, and Wichasha. And would you explain that to the folks, how that comes down to why we honor life rather than trying to kill it?
Right. I do a lot of research on words, because what we're doing is we're trying to go to the world court to file genocide on the United States of America. And I'm not afraid to talk about that today. I already had my encounter with Homeland Security agents over this issue. But we that's what we led to after we went through this ride. I rode 13 years in a row, and it took me that long to deal with my historical grief and my trauma. That's the purpose of this ride, was to deal with that. Every day we'd get on a horse and we'd ride and we'd cry, and the pain of sitting on a horse and 10, 20 below zero weather, the cold, and we'd cry and the tears would just freeze on our face. And so we'd done that. We rode all the way back to Wounded Knee, and on the ninth day when we got to Wounded Knee, we'd ride down the hill into Wounded Knee, and that's when you just choke up. You just let all that grief go. And then, but you got stronger as a result, as the years go by. And so I dealt with that trauma there so I could talk about it logically, I guess. But anyway, we all finished together, and it was only supposed to be five times, but our children will not let go. But I think when we rode into Wounded Knee, the effect we had on our people was just that. They remembered they were Lakota. Well, I guess I didn't really deal with that grief that much. But anyway, we rekindled an old fire. We brought pride back to our people, and with that wiping of the tears, it cleansed some of that pain that we look back. Because as Lakota, when we talk about history, none of it's good. All our history has been getting killed, being trampled on by Americans. They just there used to be a time here where, as an Indian, you'd be hitchhiking to Rapid City to go get a job, and a white guy goes through and shoots you or run over you and just go on. That's how bad it was. And so our history with America has never been good, and that's not our fault. It was the Americans, the way they acted. They're superior to all mankind. And as Lakota, it's the complete opposite. Nobody's superior. Everybody has equal status. So it was confusion, and we almost lost that, but we saved it. So we're still here, but we changed the atmosphere of our people. And as a result of that, today, I really feel good. My children, I rode on the ride. And then my sons all rode with me, my sons and daughters. Actually, me and my children all were on that first year's ride. Me and three of my sons and two of my daughters, they rode all year with me. And we felt so good, you know, as a family. Today, we're all good Lakota people. We're not druggers, drinkers. We're trying to raise our children Lakota. And the Lakota people, we realized we've only had contact today. We had contact for 144 years of direct contact. We first met Lewis and Clark in 1806, but direct contact was from 1851 treaty. And in 1868, by then, we had met a lot of white people here, so direct contact was only 144 years. And so our language and our culture was real. Our ceremonies were still real. The songs were still there. And I always remember that second year we came down Wounded Knee and we had a big meeting there, and there was 128 different nationalities, different Germans. There was every Indian band you could think of across America was here, craving for their ways. And they asked us, we don't have our language. We've had 500 years of contact. We don't have no ceremonies. So at that time, we had a mass meeting, and we lent them the Vision Quest ceremony and the Inipi, what they call sweat lodge. We said, you could use our two ceremonies. You go Vision Quest, and you bring back your way. And you could use our Inipi, the Purification Lodge, to go get your vision. And because it's important, you bring back your way. So we lent our religions, not our religion, our ceremonies to them for that purpose. We didn't say, yeah, go ahead and take all our ceremonies, go ahead and go start sun dancing all over the world. We didn't say that. We just said, use the Vision Quest to bring back your ceremonies, because that's important for all of us. Mother Earth needs culture, because the way we live is we cry and we pray and we actually send our voice to the different elements, the different seasons. Cry for the thunders to come back in April so we'll have a good summer, you know. So we treat the elements like they're real, and they treat us kindly back in return. So if this earth didn't have no culture, it's going to disrupt itself. So we're holding this world together for all the white people to come to us and kill us and mistreat us. That is the bottom line, how it is. But anyway, our ceremonies went out all over the world, and today there's more people wanting to be our way of spirituality rather than the white man's way. So it changed. And so, but we didn't get permission to go sun dancing all over Europe. The power's here in the Black Hills. If you want a ceremony, it's the closer you are to the Black Hills, you get the power. But that guy in Europe can't feel that power, so he's wasting his time and our time. So we don't like that, but we can't say no. How do we stop that? This kind of overthrew what we really wanted to accomplish. But the ride is today, they're going to be riding into what you call Red Owl Springs. It's south of Kyle, and they'll be riding in. And today is the day they used to honor the women and all the men, all the Bigfoot riders. Imagine women used to make sure you wash your hands, they say, but we used to cook the food. We set up the camp, and today was total honoring of the woman. They just love that attention, you know. They sit around like we used to. And spill the whole pot of potato soup. And, oh, we used to make all kinds of mistakes. But we did good, and that's what's going to happen today on the ride. So it's intimately building power back in our people, because that cry to let go of that historical grief and trauma is just the greatest sensation anybody could feel. And as a result, different bands are starting to do things. Some have walks, some have runs. And we Lakota, we get on a horse and we ride, because to take a Lakota and put him on a horse, you know, we have ancient origin stories about the horse, how he came to us, how he lived with us 10, 20,000 years ago before the white man were even born. And so that's why it's important that we Lakotas together with the horse. I just want to clear up one misconception about that. People say the horse is a dog, Shunka. He's a sacred red dog, you know, a sacred black dog, you know. And that's the furthest from the truth. The horse is a bigger wolf. That's what we call the horse, because he was bigger than a wolf, and he was more gentle, and he could carry more things. So there's a lot of misconceptions out there that needs to be changed. The whole history was written by colonizers, so none of it is true.
Alex, we're going to... If you can stay with us, we're going to come right back. We're just going to do a small station break. And this is speaking with Alex Whiteplume, who is one of the founders of the original Bigfoot Memorial Ride that's happening right now in Wounded Knee, South Dakota. And this is history, folks, and we need to pay attention to things that we don't hear in this country that is misnomered as America. This is Turtle Island, and this is the land of the indigenous peoples. And we'll be right back. This is First Voices Radio. Setting you up for this, Turning Away by Dougie McLean.
In darkness we do what we can, in daylight we're oblivion. Our hearts so raw and clear, a turning away, turning away from here. On the water we have walked like the child. What was fastened we've unlocked, revealing wondrous wild. And in search of confirmation, we have jumped into the fire and scrambled with our burning feet through uncontrolled desire. And in darkness we do what we can, in daylight we're oblivion. Our hearts so raw and clear, a turning away, turning away from here. There's a well upon the hill from our ancient past, where an ages standing still, holding strong and fast. And there's those who try to tame it and to carve it into stone. But words cannot extinguish it, however hard they're thrown. And in darkness we do what we can, in daylight we're oblivion. Thank you.
by Kilchrenan they have nourished in the mountain streams, and in searching for acceptance they had given it away. Only the children of their children know the price they had to pay. And in darkness we do what we can, in daylight we're oblivion. Our hearts so raw and clear are turning away, turning away from here. In darkness we do what in daylight we're oblivion. Our hearts so raw and clear are turning away, turning away from here.
All right, this is First Voices Radio. On the line we have Alex Whiteplume, who's with us and staying with us. In the meantime, from Woodini Creek out in Manderson, South Dakota. Thanks for joining us again, Alex. Good morning again.
Teokas, and I want to touch a little bit on words. The American language is written up, it's made up of words.
Yeah.
And all the Americans that come here to see me on Pine Ridge Rez was always asking me, how come you don't have no jobs? Look at all this land, how come you don't have no income? And so I always explain to them the importance of words. And I use the Black's Law Dictionary to interpret words. Anyway, up there, I looked up the word for person, a person. And in that book, it says a person is a corporate fiction. That's what a person is in the Black's Law Dictionary. And then I looked up human, because they always call us human. And here it says sea monster. That's what it's called in the Black's Law Dictionary.
Wow.
So then I looked up the word sea monster, and here it says it's one that cannot own or inherit property. So, and then job is public gain for dishonest act. And so, and then to employ was to employ a deceit. So to us, if I go get a job, I'm going to commit a sin.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I always look at the words and how the language just, in, you know, the people, and it just... it just amazes me how the Americans can use this language and live. The Great Lakota Nation is what we call Tithuma. And the Tithuma is made up of the Hunkpapa and Sihasapa and Makazito and Itazikcho and Ohokwoju and Ohenupa and Oglala and Sichanghu. And a long time ago, we used to call ourselves Eagle Buttes, Banding Rock, Lower Brule, Crow Creek System. But today, I think it's triggered from this ride is the bands are calling themselves by their original names. And even the Western Dakota, the Yankton, is called Mihunktuwa. They use that word, Mihunktuwa. And the Yanktinai is Mihunktuwana. And so that's, it's, I'm just so proud of that, because all we did was get on a horse and we rode for to change this. And here today, things are just starting to fall into place. And up there in Canada today, they're going to, they're all coming together in solidarity. I'm just so proud of them. There's a chief up there that's going through a hunger strike, and that's just saddening that we have to go to these extremes to get our needs met. But I think the time is finally here where all indigenous people around the world need to stand up and gain their natural territories and their natural ways back. And the reason I say this is because Mother Earth needs culture. She needs us here. And the American way, they don't have no culture. They, everything is to take, 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 take. And I wrote a little piece about Americans, too. And I went to college one time, and basically Americans are God-fearing Christian capitalists, and nothing stands in their way of making a profit. And it got this way by, one, is not talking about it, and then two, just don't report it, and three, don't talk about it, and if it does, just lie about it. That seems to be the American way. And so we really can't get nothing done here in America with that kind of an attitude towards us. When we're land, natural, everything's life. And the American way, it's opposite. It's to take, take, take. There's got to be a halfway point where we all meet sometimes. And so the Bigfoot ride, the memorial ride, and you could tell by the how each reservation was colonized. I remember on Eagle Butte, they used to call it the Bigfoot Trail Ride.
Oh, yeah.
And Rosebud called it the Ride to Wounded Knee. And each reservation had a different, you know, title for it. But it's all one word. It's called Sitankawokiksuya. And so today, that shifted. And the young kids, they made a vow to ride until they speak Lakota. And this has been going on all this time, and it's been 26 years now. And it was supposed to end in 5 years, but they carried it on extra 20 years now, and they're still riding. And I feel for them, because right now it's cold outside. It's only like 6 degrees and snowing. It's snowing right now, and my grandkids and kids are laying in the snow, coming back to Wounded Knee to feel that pain. And they're doing that so for all of us can let that historical grief and trauma go. And America created a historical debt with us. And if they was ever to get honor, if they were to honor themselves and come down here to meet with Chef Red Cloud and say, we want to honor ourselves, what can we do to bring peace between us? I think that day needs to come. But when they came here, we done a scientific calculation on how much America owed just the Lakota Nation. And it's $44 trillion is what owed us. That was going by what New York paid their people when they killed them. And this is modern times, so we estimated Obama was to come here and sit down at the table with Chief Red Cloud and bring $44 trillion and stack it up all around and say, well, I'm going to give this to you, and I want to have honor, and I want to have a new way of life. We would probably talk to him. But to us, money doesn't really mean anything, because when you die, you're not going to be buried with it. But America has a historical debt with just the Lakota, and all the other nations, they have debts with them too. They have to own up. And so they need to be honorable. Around the world, nobody likes America for some reason. They become warmongers. Every place they go, they have such a big bully military force. They just go around killing off people of color all over the world. They should go attack Canada for attacking Indians, you know, those. They should go police up the right way. Instead, it seems like they want to go for the people with oil. And so we don't want to start a big controversy, but we feel that the day is coming where the United States has to honor itself. And it's talking about human rights violations. It's criticizing other nations around the world. But America needs to look at its own backyard on its treatment towards indigenous peoples. We calculate that there's over 100 million indigenous nations, over 1,200 different speaking bands in America were wiped out, down to 327. Out of this 327, I estimate only like 16 bands that still maintain their language. It's a sorry, sorry statistic, and this is what we want to turn around, and we want to go back to bring back our language, because they all mean something. And so the American genocide was almost thorough. It's almost complete. Nowhere in the world history, any nation has ever done this to a group of people the way we were treated here in America. But they don't want to talk about it. They cover it up. So we realize that. But we're going to bring this to the world. We're starting to go out to the world and explain to them. We wish Obama or Clinton or Bush, one of them would have done this. But they won't answer our phone calls. They won't answer our letters. They just hide behind silence. So we're going to go around the world, and we're going to ask them to open that silence up. So different countries are starting to receive us. 5 years ago, I went to the United Nations in New York, and I went there to meet with Evo Morales. And he invited us, so we went up there. And what he said to me was he thought that the red man was a figment of the white man's television. He didn't know we were real. And when we told him about how we rubbed out Custer, he just laughed and slapped his knee. And he said he'd seen that show, and he thought that was made up. But now that he knows we're real, he's going home, and he told his ambassador, anything the Lakota want when they come to the United Nations, you stand behind them. The same thing happened with different ambassadors around the world. We have indigenous peoples from all over Russia, indigenous peoples from China, indigenous peoples from Venezuela that all realized we all have this horrible history, and that was contact with the Roman Catholic Church. We all have that in common. So we want to just get together and try to correct history where we have certain ways to live in certain environments, like the Black Hills. The Black Hills are just the hills. But when we say Chesapa, that means seven mountains in the Black Hills that came up, and we had a ceremony. Why that hill came up, we have to present our rituals to that ceremony. And so every nation across the world has those. And so they have to be respected. And the Aborigines, all their historic sites are built on towns with women's names, like Alice Springs, Victoria Springs. And so how can they get back to history when the whole cement jungle is built over the historical sites? It's a sad story. But I think as indigenous people getting together, we're starting to make sense, and people are starting to understand that you can't kill a culture or there'll be no way to live.
Alex, the White Plume, I'd like you to have maybe another minute or so, and I just want to express my, it's been a very honor, an honor to have you on the line with us this morning from South Dakota.
I appreciate too, and I think all indigenous peoples have to stand in solidarity over culture. That's what's going to save us. So I appreciate everything, and I appreciate all the Idle No More movements, and we support them from here on the Pine Ridge Reservation. So
thank you very much, Alex, and thanks for being there for us, bro. And we'll see you next time. Maybe this summer we'll talk, huh? Or sooner.
Oh, watch that. We will.
Okay.
Thanks, right. Teal.
Yeah, it's good to have you.
Have a good show.
Bye. We will. Thank you. Yes, that's Alex White Plume of the Oglala Lakota out in South Dakota, and telling us about that ride that happened back in 1986 to 1990, which brought us all together as Lakota people and realized where we were at. Thank you all for listening to First Voices Radio. This is Teokas and Ghost Horse. Stay tuned.
Stood still on a highway, I saw a woman by the side of the road, with a face that I knew like my own, reflected in my window. Well, she walked up to my quarter light, and she bent down real slow. A fearful pressure paralyzed me in my shadows. She said, "Son, what are you doing here? My fear for you has turned me in my grave." I said, "Mama, I come to the valley of the rich myself straight upon the motorway to hell. This is the road to hell.
listener-supported community radio.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy domingo 17 de diciembre del 2023, aquí unas noticias.